Welcome to the Biz News Briefing Visual Edition. Yeah, after 4 days of just giving you the audio, we now have video for you as well tonight. Got a heck of a show as well to kick off with. At the Biz News Conference Thursday a week ago, Nteto Nyati earned a standing ovation that he didn't quite get, but you could see that people were itching to get out of their seats for the way that he discussed that South Africa has overcome load shedding. We're going to have the key part of that tonight, those insights for you. Also, we'll be hearing about the story of Chwani. That's from Neil De Beer from the UIM after he had his regular discussion on a Sunday, on the Sunday show with my colleague, Chris Stain. Also coming up, our partners at The Economist speak about the big four accounting firms and why they've just got too big and now they just must fail or get smaller. Paul O'Sullivan unpacks the sad story of Mark Lomas, a man that I interviewed many times when he was chief executive of Group 5. He was extradited back to South Africa over the weekend, and he is now facing the music. And then finally, we've got a social media story for you about something called Perplexity, the first real challenge that Google has had. All of that coming up in the next half hour.
When this board was announced in October 2022, we spent a lot of time engaging with the power station general managers together with Jan. So one of the things that we did when this board was announced in October 2022, we spent a lot of time engaging with the power station general managers together with Jan, who was the COO, where we tried to get to understand what the issues were. And that to us as the board was very important, so that whatever we come up with, it needs to talk to the real problems. And from there, we got a sense that we had actually diagnosed the problem in the wrong way. The problem was not so much the aging fleet, but it was the unreliability of the fleet. This may sound like, you know, it's semantics, but it's not, because when you've got an aging fleet problem, really the thing that you do there is that I don't want to spend good money and chasing bad thing. Let's allow these power stations to retire. Let's not invest anything on them. So that's really that was the prevailing view at the time. And we kind of came to a different conclusion that no, we can fix these power stations. We bring them back to a point of being reliable. And we came up with this plan called the Generation Recovery Plan, which was a 2-year plan. And it was approved by the board in the middle of March last year. March last year. And it's a 2-year plan. And our expectation was that by end of March this year in 2024, we will have an energy availability factor of 65% coming from 51% a year ago. And then by the end of March 2025, we'll be sitting at energy availability factor of 70%. That's really where we are now. We're already at 65%, so we're in line with the plan, and we have a number of actions to take to get us to a point where we can say that the EAF is sitting at 70%. When it is at that point, it will have enough reserve margin. We generally always have to have something like 10 to 15% reserve margin above the demand, you know. And we're already on some days this year already sitting at that level. So, but until we are complete with the work that we had planned to do, we are not going to be declaring victory too soon. but we expect by the end of March next year, we should be in that position.
Pretty good news, isn't it, that we have, well, until March next year, the Eskom board, the plan will have come together. No more load shedding. What that means for South Africa in the long term is, well, it's very hard to overestimate the impact on this economy. On to Neil De Beer now, because the other big story that's been going around. And
now, the deadline is set, Chris. The last waltz will be on the 26th of September in the Tshwane Metro Council when the vote or the vote against. Now, the deadline is set, Chris. The last waltz will be on the 26th of September in the Tshwane Metro Council when the vote or the vote against Sylvia Brim will now be cast. It was the statement from Hillel Mashaba that said that they are either going to go and declare a new coalition with the ANC, or they are not going to vote and they would go into the opposition benches to face against that coalition. Then the people whom stay in that metro that actually deserve, nay, demand, that they just get services. It doesn't actually matter, Chris, who the hell it is. If it's a Celia, or for Peter, or for Sipa, or for Douglas, or I don't care. What must be clear is that whomever governs must put the citizens first. And I'm very sorry. In the past 3 weeks, it has absolutely not been about the citizen. It has been about power. Now, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So I think we are thoughtful now. Yeah, does it? Thoughtful. We are thoughtful of seeing the political show, the political puppets, the political rah-rah rhetoric. I cannot wait for the 26th so that we, not just as Tshwane, not just as Gauteng, but as South Africa, can go away from the table tennis match to bloody getting down to services and serving your citizens. And I think we're getting there on the 26th of September, come what may.
Thank you, Neil. And my apologies for getting a little bit of fat fingers in there. Oi, this is a first visual show for us. I can tell you it's quite interesting, the learning curve one goes through. But thanks for persevering. And we'll move on in our program tonight with our partners at The Economist. They have been having a close look at the Big Four accounting organizations, and in particular PwC, which got into a lot of trouble in the last little while. Reason is that it was the auditor of Evergrande, the company in China that hit a brick wall and cost an enormous amount of money for everybody in that country who had invested with them. Here's our partners at The Economist. What they do is they bring in actors to read through the articles. The full article is on BizNews, but this will give you a taste of what's going on down for the Big Four. That's PwC, KPMG, Deloitte, and EY, and where they might be heading into the future.
Like his fellow Victorian bean counters, Edwin Waterhouse made his name in part by unearthing frauds perpetrated during the railway mania that gripped late 19th century Britain. These days, the accounting and consulting powerhouse that traces its history to his successful sleuthing more often makes news for failing to detect financial malfeasance or for engaging in mischief itself. Between 2010 and 2023, it faced around $450 million in fines and settlements related to botched audits and other misconduct in various countries. The firm, which now goes by PwC rather than PricewaterhouseCoopers, at least spares Edwin's memory the indignity of having his name openly tied to the mess. The latest stain on PwC's reputation came on September 13th. China's authorities slapped its affiliate in the country, PwC Zhongtian, with a record $62 million fine and barred it from doing business for 6 months. Its staff, regulators said, concealed or even condoned fraud in the accounts of Evergrande, a property developer which inflated its revenues by nearly $80 billion in the 2 years before its collapse in 2021. You don't make partner because you are a good auditor. You make partner because you close deals, recalls a former Big Four employee in China. Such misalignments are especially acute in the rough and tumble markets of the emerging world. Laxer corporate oversight means more temptation for bad behavior. Employee churn also tends to be higher because workers are readier to jump ship to secure even a modest pay rise. With little management from the top, these problems could become widespread as a greater share of the firm's business comes from poor countries. Around two-thirds of the corporate entities that make up EY's global network reside outside the rich world. It's a wonder there aren't more scandals, says Tom Roddenhauser of Kennedy Intelligence, a research firm. Adopting a more top-down structure is, alas, out of the question for the Big Four. Most countries have laws that require accountancies to be domiciled locally and owned by citizens. Still, the giants could simplify their businesses by hiving off the fast-growing consulting arms, as EY attempted last year, before some American partners got cold feet. Such a split has a commercial logic. It would allow the consultants to raise the pots of money needed for technologies such as artificial intelligence. It would also allow the global leadership of the rump assurance networks to focus single-mindedly on audit quality. Splitting apart will not be easy, as EY's experience shows, but it is probably inevitable.
Indeed. Well, that is what The Economist believes is going to happen to the Big Four. There's a lot of kickback, as you heard earlier, and certainly if you've been following the story, EY was going to split and then, well, it decided not to, as our partners at The Economist write. This was because partners in the United States got cold feet. Well, someone whose feet are anything but cold right now is a gentleman by the name of Mike Lomas. He was the chief executive of Group 5, which you might remember was one of the great construction companies in the run-up to the 2010 World Cup, when the South African construction industry was accused of collusion and all kinds of crazy things. Well, Mike Lomas was brought back to South Africa over the weekend, where he was not frog marched because he was in a wheelchair, but taken through the security cordon, and he was booked by the SA Police Services on a massive fraud charge. Here's Paul O'Sullivan, whose investigations led to the former CEO of Group 5 being brought to book.
They hadn't really got any good corporate governance in place, and they were making money so fast with their corrupt practices that actually they were disorganized. They didn't even have an asset register. They had nothing. So if there was a proper audit of the company, in fact, the auditors, I've got some of the audit reports, the auditors were screaming at them because they were auditing large, and they had to have clean audits because they were working for public companies like Eskom. So they had to have clean audits. And the auditors were screaming at them because they were failing to properly manage their affairs. So they brought Mike Lomas in to help them clean up their company, which I guess for the first two or three years, he probably did quite a good job. But then what happened one day, he met with this fellow Klakudi, and Klakudi told him he needed money. So he went back to Trindade, and Trindade told him, okay, well, you pay him from your account and I'll sort you out later. So that's how it began. So he made these payments, and I think we added it up, it was like 4 or 5 million rand over a period of a few months. But every time he made a payment, because we've got Mike Lomas's bank statements as well, because when I met with him, He gave me all of his bank statements, and in fact, the statements that he had missing, he gave me a special power of attorney, and we applied to the bank, and we got those bank statements from his bank. So we were able to fill in all the gaps. And every time he made a payment to Fakudi, there was a concomitant payment from Trindade's company, Tubular Steel or whatever they were called, into his own bank account. So what that did for us was prove that it wasn't Mike Lomas, although he was actually the bank man, if you like, but it proved that Mike Lomas's version was correct, which was he was instructed to pay and then claim the money back like an expense voucher from Trindade. So
It is such low level. And I think the reason they got away with it is that the levels of corporate governance here were such that they knew they wouldn't be detected. You know, it was a chummy situation. South Africa has been. I think that's been the basis of the corporate governance breaches here, that there hasn't been that watchdog. And, you know, lucky there are people like Paul O'Sullivan who've just continued to fight relentlessly against these kind of issues. And Alec, it's years and years of this that we have to reverse in South Africa. And for a chaps like Mike, you know, to have been part of it, it's difficult to understand, you know, what he thought he'd get away with. Because eventually it comes out, you know, if not 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, you know, it comes out. And just sad.
And that's David Shapiro, who is talking to us from New York. You can get the full interview of Paul O'Sullivan and the full interview of David Shapiro on BizNews TV, and that's on YouTube, the BizNews TV channel on YouTube. Well, before we get into our final story of the evening, let me bring you up to date on what's been happening on the markets. And it's been another green day, and a really good green day for South African shares. All share index up by 1.1%. Financial shares did the best. They were 1.5% higher, and resources were 2% better. Apologies. So resources actually did better than financial shares. The Rand 13 cents stronger against the US dollar. We're at 17 Rand and 32 cents. If you're interested in the other two crosses, we're at 23.12 against the pound and 19.29 against the euro. The gold price was $10 higher at $2,632 an ounce. Bitcoin, $500 higher, $63,295. So a very, very good day again for Bitcoin. You might recall that on Friday, it picked up $5,000. A number of interesting stocks on new highs. We've been talking about Piet Viljoen's small and medium caps that he loves so much. Well, those who followed him at the BizNews conference will be celebrating CMH's 3% gain today to a new high of 38 Rand a share. And Lewis, which Pitt has been talking about for some time, that was 4% higher at 71 Rand. Sun International was 2.5% better at 48 Rand. And Discovery, after those results last week that Sean Pesch said were top draw, well, that was up 4% today at 171 rands a share. Amongst the other new highs, Standard Bank, 2.2% at 248 rand 78, and Mr. Price up nearly 2% at 260 rand a share. Capitec results coming out towards the end of, beginning of October. We'll be talking to Gerry Fourie, I think it's the first or second or third of October. We had Capitec's numbers being anticipated by the market, and it jumped another 1% today to a new high of 3,080 Rand a share. Not alone, though, as far as the financial shares are concerned. Nedbank also at a new high, 299 Rand and 81 cents. And OUTsurance keeps going stronger, although today was tempered, but 0.75% stronger at 57 Rand 76. Now, if you've been following what's going on in social media, you will know that Elon Musk has done some interesting stuff, to put it mildly, at Twitter. And the consequence of that has been a number of probably around a fifth of the people who were active on Twitter before the most recent developments in the UK, where Twitter was accused of promoting right-wing violence, they've left the channel entirely. So we've had quite an issue there as far as social media is concerned. But a more interesting point, I guess, for the purpose of our next conversation, and this will be closing off our show tonight, is that at a Berkshire Hathaway AGM some years ago, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger explained how they could not find a flaw in the Google business model. And although they'd missed out by not buying into Google early enough, they just didn't see how anything could give Google a hard time or in fact could compete effectively with Google. Well, our colleagues at the Financial Times, our partners rather, at the Financial Times of London, did a piece today on a business called Perplexity. This could be Google's worst nightmare. Let's listen in.
Well, Perplexity is trying to introduce advertising into its search AI product. We have a lot of AI products and search engines out there, but not many of them have ads in them yet. So I think Perplexity wants to redesign what the search ads business looks like. It's a very different format, and they want to really challenge what Google has created on the traditional Google search. So the way that Perplexity wants to do it is to have these ads feature in the follow-up questions. So for example, if I wanted to promote a sparkling water brand, one of the questions I could ask is sparkling water better than still water? And it would have a logo next to it of a suitable brand. It would generate just as the AI would normally respond. But the difference here is that the brand gets to sign off on the answer to make sure that it's safe, that it doesn't say anything that doesn't align with its brand values. And they also pay for it, obviously.
Are brands showing any interest in partnering with Perplexity on this?
Perplexity has been trying to target quite premium brands. Its user base is from quite high GDP countries, and some of the brands that they're in discussions with are people like Nike and Marriott. But as far as I know, no deals have been officially made yet.
And, you know, the goal here is for Perplexity to eventually take a pretty big bite out of Google. But Google kind of holds the keys to the kingdom when it comes to the digital ad space. So what sort of weaknesses does Perplexity see here?
Since ChatGPT came out, there's obviously been a huge amount of hype and excitement for generative AI. And that's the type of AI that you see in Perplexity and that you see in AI search engines. A few companies have launched AI search. Microsoft has done this with Bing, and they've started trying to monetize it a little bit. Google has launched AI search now, but they've not monetized it yet either. And they also won't release figures on how widely it's used. I think as the incumbent, it has the most to lose here, and it's trying to tread very carefully. A startup like Perplexity can be more flexible, more nimble, and make those business decisions a bit faster. But when Google does decide to jump, I think that's really when we have to sit up and take notice.
Yeah. So then in the end, do you think that Perplexity can break through and challenge Google in the digital ad space?
It's still unclear. Perplexity does have quite a strong user base, and it is growing very quickly. But so far, we've yet to see it really take over. We've yet to see it really monetize either. By and large, Google is the biggest player in the search business. Its search business has grown 14% in the last 3 months to June compared to the same period the year before. And the consumer behavior of going to AI for search is still very nascent, and we don't know if that's going to take off yet. But upstarts like Perplexity, they've still got a lot to prove.
Well, thank you for being with us for BizNews Briefing tonight. Apologies for any interruptions that you might have had. This was our first visual edition. And man, I'm looking forward to being back with you again on Wednesday. Nothing tomorrow. We've got a public holiday here at BizNews, as does the whole country tomorrow. Enjoy your day off until Wednesday. Same time, same place from Attic Hog. Cheerio.